This is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
On today's program, you will hear stories from Jill Robbins and Andrew Smith. Later, Dan Novak tells us what American public libraries are doing to bring in more visitors. We close with the next part of our U.S. history series. But first, here is Jill Robbins.
Powerful ocean storms that take place mainly in the western Atlantic Ocean are called hurricanes. People in Vietnam and other Pacific countries call similar storms in the western Pacific Ocean typhoons. The weather events bring high winds, large waves, and heavy rain. They also cause widespread destruction and displace thousands. Early Tuesday, Hurricane Ian landed in Cuba's western city of Pinar del Rio, where officials had set up shelters for 50,000 people. In Havana's El Fanguito neighborhood, near the Almendares River, health worker Abel Rodriguez and others gathered their belongings. He told the Associated Press, "I hope we escape this one, because it would be the end of us. We already have so little." The U.S. National Hurricane Center said Ian's wind speed reached 205 kilometers per hour, and the storm surge was as high as 4.3 meters along Cuba's coast. The storm is expected to strengthen even more over the warm waters of the Gulf of Mexico. The wind speed could reach 225 kilometers per hour when the hurricane makes landfall in the U.S. state of Florida late on Tuesday. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis said an estimated 2.5 million people were under evacuation orders. When you have 5 to 10 feet of storm surge, that is not something you want to be a part of, DeSantis said Tuesday. And Mother Nature is a very fearsome adversary. At the Kennedy Space Center, NASA moved its moon rocket from the launch area back into a large building for protection from the storm. And the airports in Tampa and St. Petersburg announced they would be closed Tuesday afternoon. In the Southeast Asian country of Vietnam, officials closed airports, set a curfew, and evacuated over 800,000 people near the coastlines on Tuesday. The order came as Typhoon Noru was crossing the South China Sea to hit Vietnam after leaving at least 8 dead in the Philippines. Officials said Noru is expected to make landfall in Vietnam on Wednesday with a wind speed of 180 kilometers per hour. An official from the weather agency said, "The storm is so strong that we've started feeling the impact even when it has not made landfall yet." The typhoon is expected to hit the central areas of Quanghai, where a major oil refinery is located, and Quang Nam, home to the World Heritage City of Hoi An. About 270,000 military service members were placed on standby for emergencies. And Prime Minister Pham Minh Chinh told officials, "We don't have much time left. The storm is intensifying, so our responses must be stronger and faster." I'm Jill Robbins.
Kenya's wildlife officials have made a free mobile phone app to help track wild animals in the country. They plan to use information from the app to help protect the animals. Kenya is home to nearly 400 species of mammals. Officials say it is getting more difficult to protect them as climate change and human activities damage their natural environments. The Mammal Atlas Kenya, or MaKenya, lets any user who sees a wild mammal identify it and give its location. Users can also give other details. You can also add the behavior, said Dr. Simon Musila, a researcher at the National Museums of Kenya. When you see this animal, what are they doing? Are they resting? Are they running away? Are they feeding? What are they doing at the moment you see them? Musila said there is a need to have many people use the app to get more information about the animals. This can help the small number of mammal specialists in Kenya. The specialists have kept records of the animals' changing environments and survival conditions. Many people, including safari guides, visitors, students, or anyone who goes out and sees the animals, could use the app, Musila said. They can upload images and add details, such as the number of mammals and their exact locations. Samson Onyuok uses the MaKenya app. He said he is proud to help protect animals in his country. Users like him have reported more than 2,500 mammal sightings since August. I think as a Kenyan, that is my little way of contributing to the conservation initiatives, Onyuok said. Experts say that while Africa is not the cause of much climate change, it is badly affected by it. Dr. Philip Maruti, vice president of the African Wildlife Foundation, told VOA that the birth rate of rare mammals and the survival rate of young ones are dropping. It is very hard to benefit or manage what you don't know, he said. That is why this is so important. It is going to tell us which species we have, where they are, and maybe which ones are highly endangered, what we need to do about them, and especially not just the big things, but also the small things, like the bats. Wildlife officials say Kenya is home to at least a third of the mammal species in Africa and are hopeful app users will help protect them. I'm Andrew Smith.
A public library in Boston has a place for serving alcoholic, book-themed drinks. A library in Maryland has a basketball court steps away. Another in Delaware has a room for teenagers to play video games. Public libraries around the United States are changing what it means to be a library. Instead of just being places for books, they have become community centers. The days of basically being a book repository are over. They are long gone, said Leah Rosal. She is director of the Lewis Public Library in the state of Delaware. We have one quiet room designated in this library. I think that goes to show that things are changing. Lewis opened its new library in 2016. Rosal said the newer and larger building has been able to attract new visitors and has permitted the library to hold more events. This month, the library held events like discussions about books and current events, movie showings, poetry writing workshops, and Spanish language discussions. Rosal said one of the most popular events for children this year was when a nature center brought in several reptiles. The Lewis Library also has a special room for teenagers, with books aimed at teens and young adults. In the teen tech suite, they can use things like 3D printers and virtual reality goggles. Delaware Libraries also has a program to mail a free book to families with young children each month. The goal is to provide children with a large book collection in their home without having to pay for it themselves. In some communities, libraries are where people access social services. Rosal said that the library in Lewis and other libraries across the state can fill the gaps in community services. She said that because Delaware is a low-tax state, it does not have many community centers. Maria McCauley is the president of the Public Library Association and the director of public libraries in Cambridge, Massachusetts. "There's so much to the library experience that public libraries are offering now," she said. "It is often about enriching people's lives in a variety of ways. And it might be about learning a particular skill. It might be about just learning about an idea or an issue that's happening, or it might be about enjoying a performance." Wheaton, Maryland's new public library opened in 2019 and is attached to a community recreation center. Library Director Anita Vassallo said the combined building has gotten new visitors. For example, she said teenagers who use the recreation center's basketball court will step into the library to see what's going on. There are also special spaces in the library for children to do their homework. McCauley said many libraries across the country have been built next to other services. In Cambridge, she said on one city block there is a library, a school, a community center, and an athletic center. Wheaton is in Montgomery County, Maryland, one of the most diverse counties in the United States. The county's school system has students from more than 164 countries speaking 184 languages. The diversity of the community drives much of the library's programming. For English learners, the library holds weekly conversation clubs where people can talk in English in an informal setting. The library also holds job fairs and partners with local organizations to help families get health insurance. People who cannot afford to buy their own laptop computers can borrow one from the library. The American Library Association found that across the country, 76% of libraries help visitors use government programs and services. About 73% help people apply for jobs. "We really want libraries to be community hubs," Vassallo said. "That's what they're meant to be." The Wheaton and Lewis libraries have bookstores where visitors can buy new and used books, often from the library's collection. The money raised goes back to supporting the libraries. Wheaton's library also has a cafe. Boston's historic public library has a tea room and bar with drinks like Tequila Mockingbird and Of Milk and Men. The idea of a library as a kind of a silent place where you come and do your research and think deep thoughts, "it's not really what we do," Vassallo said. libraries can be very lively places that can be noisy. They should be full of life. I'm Dan Novak.
From VOA Learning English, welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in Special English. I'm Steve Ember. In May of 1787, a group of America's early leaders met in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. They planned to amend the Articles of Confederation. That document established a loose union of the 13 states. Instead, the leaders wrote a completely new constitution. It created America's system of government and recognized the rights of its citizens. Last week, we told how the group reached agreement on the position and powers of a national executive. They decided the executive could veto laws, and they decided the person could be removed from office if found guilty of serious crimes. We also told about the debate on a national judiciary. The delegates approved a federal system of courts and judges. These courts would hear cases involving national laws, the rights of American citizens, and wrongdoing by foreign citizens in the country. State courts would continue to hear cases involving state laws. Next, the delegates began to discuss competing proposals for a national legislature. This would be the most hotly debated issue of the convention. It forced the question of equal representation. Would small states and large states have an equal voice in the central government? The convention had already agreed that the national legislature would have two houses. It had not agreed, however, on the number of representatives each state would have in each house. The large states wanted representation based on population, but the small states believed they would lose power to the large states. They wanted representation to be the same for all states, no matter what the size. One day, Gunning Bedford of Delaware, one of the smallest states, looked straight at the delegates from the largest states. "Gentlemen," he shouted, "I do not trust you. If you try to crush the small states, you will destroy the Confederation. And if you do, the small states will find some foreign ally of more honor and good faith who will take them by the hand and give them justice." The debate on legislative representation, big states against small states, lasted for weeks that summer in Philadelphia. The delegates could not agree, so they debated other parts of the proposal. One involved the names of the two houses of the legislature. Most spoke of them simply as the first branch and the second branch. We will speak of them by the names used today, the House of Representatives and the Senate. Next came the question, who could be elected to the House and Senate? Delegates did not take long to decide. Members of the House, they agreed, must be at least 25 years old. They must have been citizens of the United States for 7 years. And at the time of election, they must live in the state in which they are chosen. The delegates agreed that members of the Senate must be at least 30 years old. They also must have been a citizen of the United States for 9 years. And at the time of election, they too must live in the state in which they are chosen. But who would elect them? The question raised an interesting issue. It concerned democracy. In 1787, the word democracy meant something very different from what it means today. To many of the men meeting in Philadelphia, democracy meant mob rule. To give power to the people was an invitation to anarchy. Still, George Mason of Virginia argued for popular elections. The people will be represented, Mason said, so they should choose their representatives. James Wilson of Pennsylvania agreed. He stated firmly that the people must elect at least one branch of the national legislature. That, he said, was a basic condition for free government. The majority of the convention agreed with Mason. The delegates decided that members of the House of Representatives should be elected directly by the people. Akhil Reed Amar is a professor at Yale Law School in Connecticut. He says the delegates' decision to let people elect their representatives helped change the meaning of the word democracy.
The success of the American Constitutional Project has proved to the rest of the world that democracy can work, government of, by, and for the people can survive and flourish, and this has been a model for the rest of the world.
However, most delegates agreed that the state legislatures would choose the representatives to the second legislative branch, the Senate. It remained that way for more than 100 years. In 1913, the states approved the 17th Amendment to the Constitution. This amendment legalized the direct election of senators by the people. How long would lawmakers serve? Roger Sherman of Connecticut thought representatives to the House should be elected every year. Elbridge Gerry of Massachusetts agreed. He thought a longer term would lead to a dictatorship. James Madison of Virginia protested. It will take almost 1 year, he said, just for lawmakers to travel to and from the seat of government. Madison proposed a 3-year term, but the delegates finally agreed on 2 years. There were many ideas about the term for senators. A few delegates thought they should be elected for life. In the end, the convention agreed on a Senate term of 6 years. Next came a debate about the pay for elected officials. How much should they get? Or should they be paid at all? Some delegates thought the states should pay their representatives to the national legislature. Others said the national legislature should decide its own pay and take it from the national treasury. That idea, James Madison argued, was shameful. He thought the amount should be set by the Constitution. Again, Madison lost the argument. The Constitution states only that lawmakers will be paid for their services and that the money will come from the national treasury. Finally, the time came for the convention to face the issue of representation in the House and Senate. The large states still wanted representation based on population, and the small states still wanted equal representation. The delegates had voted on the issue several times since the convention began. but both sides stood firm. Yet they knew they could not continue to vote forever, day after day, so the delegates did what large groups often do when they cannot reach agreement. They voted to create a committee. This grand committee would try to develop a compromise. The rest of the delegates would enjoy themselves during the July 4th holiday marking American independence. July 4th, Independence Day. It marked the 11th anniversary of America's Declaration of Independence from British rule. The celebration was especially important in Philadelphia. It was the city where the Declaration of Independence was signed. Now it was the city where a new nation was being created. Convention President George Washington led a group of delegates to a ceremony at a Philadelphia church. They heard a speech written especially for them. "Your country looks to you with both worry and hope," the speaker said. "Your country depends on your decisions. Your country believes that men such as you, who led us in our war for independence, will know how to plan a government that will be good for all Americans. Surely we have the ability to design a government that will protect the liberties we have won." After the speech, Benjamin Franklin urged the convention to ask for God's help. He said each meeting should begin with a prayer. Hugh Williamson of North Carolina quickly ended any discussion of Franklin's idea. The convention, he said, had no money to pay a minister to lead the delegates in prayer. On July 5th, the Grand Committee presented a two-part compromise. It provided something for large states and something for small states. It called for representation based on population in the House and for equal representation in the Senate. The committee said both parts of the compromise must be accepted or both rejected. Delegates debated the compromise for many days. They knew if they did not reach agreement, the convention would fail. Those were dark days in Philadelphia. Later, Luther Martin of Maryland noted that the newspapers reported on how much the delegates agreed. But that was not the truth. "We were on the edge of breaking up," Martin said. "We were held together only by the strength of a hair." Delegates Robert Yates and John Lansing of New York had left the convention in protest. But George Mason of Virginia declared he would bury his bones in Philadelphia before he would leave without an agreement. Even General George Washington was depressed. He wrote to Alexander Hamilton, who had returned to New York temporarily. "I am sorry you went away," Washington said. "Our discussions are now, if possible, worse than ever. There is little agreement on which a good government can be formed. I have lost almost all hope of seeing a successful end to the convention, and so I regret that I agreed to take part." On July 16th, the convention voted on the issue for the last time. It accepted what is called the Great Compromise. But even this agreement raised another problem. If representation was based on population, who would you count? Would you count just free people? Or would you count Negro slaves too?
That's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.